All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio. This is Veterans Radio. And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
What There I Was is all about is telling stories. And we give you themes, and you come up and you give us 5-10 minutes about whatever your story happens to be. Tonight's program is basic training. And so we've got a really good turnout tonight, so I'm really excited about that. And so first on our list is John Kinzinger. John Kinzinger was in the service from 1966 to 68 in the Army, and he retired as an E-5. So, John?
Basic training. We got on the train in Detroit and went down to Fort Knox, Kentucky. 19-and-a-half-year-old guy that just left. Nice job at Ford Motor Company, making more money than my father. Had a nice 1965 Chevy Impala that I raced at the dragway. And tried to do my best chasing women, too, but Uncle Sam decided to stop all that. There I am, coming into A-10-5, Fort Knox, Kentucky. That was our basic training company. Throw your bunks, throw your bags over there on the bunk. Head on over to mess hall. So I throw my crap on the bunk, and I started going to the mess hall, and it's right next door. I'm walking around there. I learned the hard way that you're supposed to run anytime you're outside. Harry, I'm doing push-ups. And this E4 is, you know, grilling me like he's a general. Okay, now do you know why you're doing push-ups? I said, no. Well, give me 10 more. So we did this for a while. And finally he broke down, because I was breaking down too. And he says, get out of here. Just don't let me catch you run or walking again. Then we had our basic training sergeant, Kirk. This guy was amazing. He was a total drunk. He was an E6. But somehow he could leave the barracks after we were done for the day. We're polishing our boots and all that stuff, and we're getting ready to conk out. He leaves. You know, you're on fire watch one night, and he comes staggering in. I'll be damned if that guy couldn't get up in the morning and run us like, you know, nothing ever happened. He had been overseas, and I'll never forget Sergeant Kirk. I did have the luxury of going when I was drafted. I went. There were 8 of us from a high school class. We all went down together. So we were in the old World War I buildings, and most of us were in my bay. And my best friend today, he was in the building next door, but diversity. You know, we didn't use those words back then, but I'd never seen or really talked to somebody from Tennessee or Kentucky. As a matter of fact, our high school class was mostly white. I'm now finding out that there's other people out there. And basic training was my first injection of that. Now, you couldn't be very modest being in basic, because there's no such thing as stalls or anything in the latrine. You know, it's 5 commodes in a row or whatever, and they could certainly come up with unusual ways to punish you for cleaning latrines. It was quite a learning experience. I was definitely ready to get out of basic training. I passed my PT test, and I shot well on the rifle range, and I didn't know where I was going after that, but all of us were in the same boat, so it sort of made the journey together much easier. Sweat, well, it was near the end of the cycle that got warm. February in Fort Knox isn't that warm, and wouldn't you know it, there's spinal meningitis. There's a case of it on the post. So everyone had to leave their windows open at night. And in order to keep the snow off my head, I took my dust cover and I put it over the end of the bunk just so that the snow wouldn't come in. They broke me down very well, you know, from what I had been doing. And of course, you got the haircut and all the rest of that. But basic training was a real experience. And I was glad to move on to my AIT.
Anybody have a question for John? No questions? Oh.
Did you ever want to quit and go home?
No, you couldn't very well do that. Not in front of your especially the guys you went to high school with. There was no sissy time. You know, you couldn't, you just had to suck it up when things got rough. I do remember trying to make Soldier of the Month, you know, in our company. And there I was. There was only two of us left, and brass is all polished and boots polished. And this guy, I think it was from Tennessee. His last name is Coon. I'll never forget his name. He was chosen over me. And I asked the sergeant who was doing the judging, I said, wait a minute. How come? Well, turns out I had shaved in the morning and I had a little gray. And this guy was baby, had a baby face, you know. And I'll never forget Sergeant Coon. I wonder what, I mean, he was Coon, Private Coon. I don't know whatever happened to him. But one other thing that did, I found out what a conscientious objector was. You know, somebody said, well, he's a conscientious objector. I didn't know what the hell it was. We had two guys in our unit. Their last name was Middleton. They were twins. Both conscientious objectors. It was for religious reasons. So one time I caught one of them. I said, you're conscientious. What does that mean? Why? You're not going to fire rifles or whatever? He said, we're going to be medics. We're both volunteering, you know, we're conscientious objectors, we're going to be medics. And I often wondered if the Middleton boys made it home. Any other questions? I know you didn't have, that wasn't a question, but something just popped up in my head, and it's going to happen to you, too, when this microphone's right in your face.
You're going to remember the great adventure.
Anyway. So that's the first thing, the only thing. Yeah, I really don't remember. My dad had sold my car by then. So I had to borrow Mom and Dad's car if I was going to go anywhere. But, oh, I do remember what happened. When I came home, I'd gotten a Dear John letter in basic. And I ran into the girl, and she wanted me back. Yeah, you know what she got? Hit the road, Jack. But that was what happened. That's what I remember.
I guess I'll go over here with John Kinzinger. Again, thanks, John. Isn't it amazing the stories that we learn from all these different adventures that we're going to be talking about tonight and things that are going to trigger hopefully some decent memories for you. All right, next up, we've got Brian Grab. Oh, my goodness. 1968 to 71, he was in the Army as well. Good friend of Veterans Radio and a good friend of There I Was.
Basic. Was anything but basic. To put it mildly, I was built like when I went in. I was 19 years old. I played tennis, and I thought I was in pretty darn good shape. They thought differently. But I learned a lot in basic training. I knew I didn't have two left feet. They straightened that out in a hurry. I learned other uses for a toothbrush. In the latrine, knew how to make a bed so darn tight you could bounce a quarter off of it. And the drill sergeant, I found out he was a close talker. He left quite an impression upon me. Actually, he left a crease in my forehead from that Smokey the Bear hat. Took me 3 weeks to get rid of that. And he was pretty tough. He was a drunk, too. John, I don't know if there was a prerequisite to be a DI. I don't know. Two incidences I remember fondly about basic training. You know, we all try to make it the best of it. And I wanted to be in Bravo Company. I was Charging Charlie, C-84. And I wanted to be in Bravo because these guys were twirling weapons out there. I said, man, that's cool. And we couldn't transfer, so we stayed with Charlie. And one day, though, we did march out to this large field, and the instructor says, we're going to fix bayonets today. Oh, that's cool. We all fixed bayonets until some jerk bent over to tie his shoe and stabbed himself in the eye. He says, okay, you girls, I'll put them away now. That was that. The other thing I remember, too, when I first got to basic training, much like you, John, I threw my bunk, you know, I found my bunk, and I had my duffel bag over my shoulder going up to the second floor of this hooch or barracks or whatever, and some guy ran down the stairs and about knocked me over, and I turned around and looked at his name tag, Bastuba. Terry Bastuba. I went to grade school with Terry Bastuba, and I saw two other guys I went to grade school with. You can imagine the good times we had. And Terry Bastuba and I, we were on some bivouac up into the mountains of Kentucky one night, and we had this little two-man pinch pup tent, you know, the triangle pup tent, and you got to dig a circle around it and, you know, get inspected for that to make sure, you know, got proper drainage and everything. And I remember I had this little small radio. And I got CKLOW. Man, I was excited. That's home, you know. So we had a fun time singing songs like that. And he and I kind of got into this tent and snuggled in there. And you don't usually do that with another guy, but we did. And in the morning, we woke up and everybody left. It was about 6 inches of snow, and our tent collapsed. So I got my experience at KP, which I really didn't mind because we found out the head chef in the Army in the mess hall came from a very famous restaurant in Detroit, Sinbad's. He was the head chef at Sinbad's. So we tried to get on KP every time we can because he'd make us pizzas or anything we want any night. So like I said, we made the best of it. They did teach you a lot. They taught me integrity. They carried on my father's training as a child with respect. And I always said that the Army doesn't make a man out of you. It just shows you what it takes to be a man. Thank you. Oh, when you're snuggling, with your buddy and you got CKLW on the radio? No, you know, yeah, well, I mean, you're just dog tired and nobody knew where we were because we were covered with snow. Our tent, 6 inches of snow, they didn't even know our tent was there. And when you're waking up and that tent's right in your face like that, you know, what happened? Lights went out. Yeah, we all got out and everybody was gone. So I guess we were AWOL. Good question. I'm going to say it was like November, late November. Yeah. Couldn't wait to get to Vietnam. Matter of fact, they never told us we were going to Vietnam. They said two classes before you, that was the cutoff. It was two classes after you, not before. Interesting. You slipped a lot. So, I mean, you were in the prone position. So you're down there. Give me 50. Yep. While you're down there. Any other questions?
Guys are great. Guys are great. All right, so we're going to, I don't know if we're going to do a change in direction right now, but we are a little bit. Our next speaker is Christine Cook, and Christine is a colonel in the United States Army Reserve. She just retired. She was in a service, I can't do that, gives you your age. Pretty close. But anyway, she was in the service for 30 years. Made colonel. They made a mistake. They didn't make her a general. But we have her here tonight, so Colonel Christine Cook, welcome.
It does kind of go in a slightly different direction because as an ROTC scholarship candidate, I did not go to basic training, I have to admit. What they used instead was that they would set up a... so they would give us every week we got to go to training, and over the course of 4 years, this basically qualified as our basic training. We would do something that was close to basic training, which was our advanced course for 6 weeks in the summer between our junior and senior year. Unfortunately, 2 weeks before my advanced course, I came down with mononucleosis. So I missed my first one, which meant that I had to go recycle to the next one in the year after I graduated from college. So basically, all I had between college and commission as a second lieutenant was this 6-week advance course. Needless to say, I didn't want to recycle again. So I learned two major things while I was in this 6-week camp. It was at Fort Bragg, or Fort Drag, in Vietnam. And so I got down there. It was hot as Hades. I found out later that Iraq is hotter. But I got there, and I learned two things. One, I learned how to eat really fast. We will talk about why in a moment. I also learned how to come up with a very stiff upper lip, which stood me in good stead later in my career. So the first thing was I learned to eat really fast. And that was because we had 5 companies that shared the same mess hall. And if you were the first one, you would sit down with your food, and immediately they would say, get up, the next company has to go through. If you were the last company, they would say the same thing to you because another battalion was coming through after you. So I realized that I really hated choking down the food by going down. 20 seconds later, they're telling me to get back up again. It was not my idea of a good time. So instead, what I decided was I was going to go through there. And remember, it was 120 degrees there. So I would go in. I would get myself a biscuit. I would slather that biscuit with peanut butter and jelly. I would go over to the drink station. I would pound down 2 unsweetened iced teas, 2 waters, and I would walk right out the door. And then I would eat in peace and quiet while everybody else in there was basically getting upset because they were being told to finish up and eat. Of course, they would yell at me because, you shouldn't be out here eating that. And I said, why not? I'd be out here anyway because you guys tell me I have to get out of here. All right. So that was the one thing I learned. The other thing I learned had to do with stiff upper lip. So we were on a rotation. There was something called Recondo Day. And Recondo Day was where you had to do the slide for life and you had to walk out over this rope and hang and ask for permission to drop into a 40-foot ravine and do a catwalk across another 40-foot ravine. And it ended up, before we went on to a live fire exercise, we had to go through a confidence course. Okay. I'm sorry, an obstacle course, but by this time they were calling them confidence courses. Because you would get confidence because you were going to get through and then you would feel good about yourself. Right? So, I had made it through Recondo Day. It was no joke, 120 degrees and perhaps a slight exaggeration, 200% humidity. The slide for life felt wonderful because you ended up in the water. I didn't enjoy the 40-foot ravine drop, but there was water at the end. That was good. All right. So I'm in the confidence course. And I got through, you know, you go through and then you come back and you have to do the same things all over again. And my buddy was trying to help me out. He was like 6'5", 215 pounds. And, you know, so he was half the time he was just pulling me over the obstacles. And in one, it probably he shouldn't have done so. Because what ended up happening was it was a log roll. Everybody remember the log roll by any chance? Okay, so you kind of have to go over. The log roll was higher than me, but, you know, I'm supposed to get over it and then roll over and then come back up the other side. Well, he decided to help me by rolling the log a little bit faster than I expected. I fell off of it onto a sharp, straight elbow. That hurt. That hurt more than I can imagine it hurting. Yes. So for the rest of the day, I was like this. This was week 5 of a 6-week program. I was pretty sure I'd broken my elbow. So then we went on a field training exercise for 72 straight hours, no rest. I was babying this arm, hoping nobody would notice. But my buddy noticed. He said, you got to go in and get that checked. So after the field training exercise, I took him up on that offer. I went over. 3 days to graduation, people. 3 days to second lieutenant. The guy looks at me, realizes that I basically wake up in the morning like this, and I have to push it down. He goes, it could be broken. We better do some x-rays, and then we'll recycle you. So he went away. I thought about it, and I didn't have to think about it hard. And it had been stuck like this, so I just got it down. And I said, it's working. I think I'll just work it out. Don't worry about it. I'll see you later. I did not let them look at it with an x-ray machine. And for 6 weeks after that, I kept waking up in the morning and pulling it back down again. But I got myself through, and I saluted my sergeant major when I went across that stage. Thank you. Any questions? It was co-ed, and it was 8 women were in my company of 40. I ended up being a 42 Bravo, which is a personnelist, AG company.
Okay, we're moving right along here, and it looks like we're going to possibly have a Marine that wants to talk to us. And as he works his way up here, we'll find out what is happening. The differences between these basic trainings, other than the length that we talked about before, and we're kind of making fun of each other, is it sounds like they're all the same, that they're trying to break it down and build you up again in their image and to be confident. And that's the one thing. I love the confidence course. I thought that was the greatest thing going. I felt like I was in Boy Scout camp. Swinging on ropes, all those other different things. How bad can that be?
Thank you very much.
Who is that? I know. I'd like to start calling him Christopher.
That wouldn't be funny, I don't think.
So. Yeah, but you still only had the 20 seconds to eat. That was after you couldn't even get into the mess hall unless you'd already memorized your number, whatever that thing was. Well, that was true, but that was really difficult with the soups. And who had meat? That's what I was questioning. Somebody said, "Oh, meat in the mess hall? What? You had stuff that was still moving." And so, anyway. Good job. I hope you guys are having fun, all of you out there. I think it's terrific that you're willing to share these stories with us. And we're going to keep moving on here. And my next list is...
Thank you, Tim. Thank you very much. All right. Yeah, you don't want to get recycled or what they had at Fort Polk, they had the Motivation Platoon.
Remember those? Once somebody went that way, you never saw them ever again. I don't know where they went, but they never bothered us ever again either. So that was fine. Thank you very much. I know. He was the guy that did that. I mean, I was a platoon leader, so I had my own room. I thought that was kind of cool. Yes, he's demonstrating how to the pugil stick type of thing where you whack somebody in the face with a rifle butt. I don't even remember that part of it, but that's great. All right, how are we doing? All right, we're moving right along here. We've got a couple more stories here, and I'm really excited to hear this. The next one up is it's Bob Kurtz, and Bob was in the Air Force and was an E-6.
All right. Well, my experience, really, in the Air Force, I learned all you have to do is know 3 words. Sir, yes, sir. Once you learn those 3 words, the military becomes very easy. Of course, there was a lot of guys that couldn't understand those 3 words. I learned real quick. But the rest of the basic training was really a joke. Yeah, we had an obstacle course, and I think they might have called it the confidence course. But it was, we went over and under a couple of logs, and we had this rope crossing. The guy in front of me, he was a short guy. He fooled around with the rope. I guess we lost our signal. Okay. Anyway, he fooled around with the rope, and I says, "Hey, don't jiggle the rope." Well, anyway, he didn't listen to me. So I just extended my arms to the sky. and his feet came off that rope. Yeah, he went in the water. The water was not a place where you wanted to be, because everybody that went in the water caught pneumonia. Never saw that person again. Our troop that we had started out with 50 people. We ended up with 20. 20 guys in our platoon or thing, whatever we did. And we never learned to march. I've never seen some of the worst marching people, even through my whole 20-year career. The Air Force can't march. It's a disgrace almost. Oh, boy. I tell you, even in basic training, I think we half-stepped march more than we forward-stepped. Unbelievable. I can see, though, that time is getting short. And I hope that if any of you decide to go in the service, it's the Air Force. We have good food, too.
Can you imagine if they tried to recruit us now? Are there any questions for Bob? I was thinking the same thing. I did more stuff in the Boy Scouts than I ever did in basic training. For Pete's sake, come on, you know. Guys in basic training, they couldn't start a fire with sticks and stuff. Can start a fire anyway. Yeah. You guys, that was a Marine's comment that they used napalm there. Okay. All right, well, we're going to continue moving along here.
All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio. This is Veterans Radio. And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
There we go. So as I was saying, our next speaker is Al Merritt, and Al was in the Army, and he ended up as an E-4, and he drove trucks.
I did. I drove the hell out of them. Well, anyway, you know, basic training, I was drafted in 68, and went to Ann Arbor High School, and class of 66 had like 5 representatives in my basic training class. And it was the largest draft from Washtenaw County. And at that time, the American Legion used to be right behind the Michigan Stadium. And that's where we all left from. And they sent up there some Greyhound buses. I think there was 3 of them, if I remember right. And we all went down to good old Fort Wayne. And along with Washtenaw County, there was other areas that was sent down there as well. And the guy says, well, I don't know, he had brass on his sleeve. I don't know what the hell he was, but he sounded important anyway. So he said, okay, he said, anybody with the prefix of U.S., take one step forward. Anybody with an IRA prefix, sit down. So half of the people were standing up, you know, and he said, okay, now I want you to sound off by fives. So everybody's saying 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, and everybody said, what the hell's going on? And so after he got done, he said, okay, all the 1 step forward, you're in the Army. All the 2 step forward, you're in the Marines. All the 3 steps forward, Navy, so forth, Air Force. And so that's how they decided to do this. And so then we went off to Fort Knox, Kentucky, great old Fort Knox, up misery, down agony, and over heartbreak, I remember. But we did some silly things in basic training. I was there in March. And, of course, they were the two-story barracks. They gave us a 1x10 board. It was about 15 feet long, and you had to knock the icicles off the second floor because it was hazardous walking around them during the wintertime. So we did all that, and, you know. But I was also, as Timmy, in transportation. When I started basic, I was a country boy, you know, and I didn't know anything about this stuff, you know. So they made me a truck driver because I guess I didn't know anything else. But I forgot where I was going with that. That's the way my mind works. Oh, sorry about that. I ended up a sharpshooter because we trained with M14s, which was the best weapon that the Army ever come up with. And very, very accurate, very easy to use, very dependable. I made soldier of the quarter, John. Yes, sir. And so I was pretty strike. I made E2 come out of basic, which a lot of people didn't do. Most people come out E1, private E1s. So I was pretty happy about all that and went to Fort Bliss, Texas to start my OJT and drove reefer trucks and five-ton tractor trailers and all kinds of stuff. But I was married when I got drafted, so I went through the whole process, you know. And then when I got down to Fort Bliss, it was just like, being at home working a job, 9 to 5, lived off base. It was a great life until I got that little paper that says, Southeast Asia wants you, brother. So that's all. Short and sweet.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks. Yep. Al Merritt, truck driver personified.
Make us a special SOS meal. She says, absolutely. You tell me when you're going to be here and I'll make it. So she used to make us an SOS meal, original SOS meal.
Did you ever do KP in basic?
Oh, man, did I ever do KP? Oh, yeah. I mean, I think everybody did KP at one time or another if you were in the Army. You know, you had to clean out the grease pits, you know? No?
No, they made me, I told you, they made me a platoon leader. So if you guys did not do KP, then he would yell at me.
Oh, yeah, but it was a pretty nasty job cleaning out those grease pits. Pots and pans, scrubbing them. And now then when I got to driving for permanent party, what they call it in Texas, we used to have to go out to the basic training ranges and stuff. And they got these portable potato peeler machines, and they throw the potatoes in, and it peels. I said, what the hell? We had to do it with a pocket knife or whatever, you know? They just throw these potatoes in there, and there's the wheels that go around it. The new Action Army. Thank you.
Thank you, Al. All right, so our next guest is also from the other side of the aisle, another officer type person. And so I'm going to introduce Kate Melcher. Kate was a captain in the United States Army. She was a helicopter pilot as well. So we want to welcome a fellow rotorhead to our There I Was story for tonight. So Kate Melcher, thank you.
Well, thanks, guys. So unlike most of you who spent some time in the garden spots of Southeast Asia or Southwest Asia, in Colonel Cook's case, I didn't spend any time downrange. In fact, the only time I was ever shot at was in basic training. But I'll get to that in a second. Basic training was not for me. I was an old lady when I went to basic training. I was 26 years old. I was a college graduate. I'd been working in the Senate for a few years, and I was a seasoned 26-year-old before I ever enlisted. So I arrive at Fort Jackson, relax in Jackson, and because of my college degree, I was already an E4. So here's Specialist Melcher, the 26-year-old old lady showing up at basic training. It was a co-ed company. We were Delta 113 war dogs, and the equivalent of about 3 platoons were male, and 1 platoon was female, but we were all integrated in each of the platoons. The only time that we weren't integrated was at night. The females would stay in open bay barracks of their own. The males would stay in their open bay barracks. And every single night, without fail, I would have some of these younger women come and sit at the end of my bed and say, Specialist Melcher, they said that they're going to recycle all of us, the whole company, if we don't get this right. And I, just tears and tears and tears. I'm going, you guys, did you notice the number of buses that we're driving up today? That's the company coming right behind us. They're not going to recycle the whole company. Get up in the morning, dress right dress, do your best, and stop crying. I'm trying to sleep. Oh, my word. So I was in the military in an era when we kind of knew where we were going to go. We all volunteered, and we got to choose our career trajectory. So long as you met the standard along the way, you knew where you were going. And I thought that was great because I knew I was headed for OCS. I knew I was headed for flight school. The problem is that the drill sergeants also knew that. They knew that I was bound to be an officer. And they made me pay for it every single day in basic training. So like Mr. Throneberry over here, I was also a platoon leader. Anytime anyone in the platoon made a mistake, fell out of a run, was late to formation, you name it. Anytime anybody stepped one hair out of line, I was in the front leaning rest. So I got real strong in basic training. But not strong enough, it turns out. Like Colonel Cook was talking about, confidence courses often produce injuries, and I was no exception. So the Army doesn't like to waste time, right? You got to be actively training at all times. We don't train to time, we train to standard, and we haven't met the standard. Okay. So the whole platoon goes through the confidence course. Everything's great, but it's not chow time yet, so we need to go through the course again. All right, let's go through the course by squad. All right, everybody through, squad by squad, through the confidence course. Oh, okay, it's not chow time left. Platoon leaders, pick your best soldier. The two of you are going to go through the confidence course. So I'm as strong as I've ever been in my life at this point in basic training, but I'm also only 5'9". And many of these obstacles are much taller than I am. And so I choose the tallest private I can find in the platoon. Private Pace out of Indiana was about 6'5", and God, just a beanpole. I mean, he was all knees and elbows, this guy. But I thought, all right, this is going to work. So Private Pace and I are running through this obstacle course, and we get to Jacob's Ladder. And to this day, I can't tell you what happened. But when I came to, the drill sergeants told me that somehow we got tangled, we both fell, Private Pace fell on top of me, and he was fine. So I was in a good deal of pain. You know, I'd been knocked out, and I was determined not to recycle. Had about 2 weeks left in basic training. I said, I don't want to go to sick call. I don't want to go to sick call. I just need to make it through. Basic training is not for me. I am not going to survive this if I have to do this again. And it's not just because it was a physical challenge, but the leadership challenge of being in that environment was really something. This may challenge some of your sensibilities here, but being in open bay barracks with all of those women, some of whom were relatively new to being a woman, didn't understand how their bodies and cycles would react to a training environment such as that. You all know that you get to go to the PX once at the beginning, and you might get to go later on if you had done it right, but you really need to plan for being without access to a drugstore or the PX for a very long time, and I think you know what that means for females. Most of them did not make those plans. So we got about 6 weeks into basic training, and there was a shortage of products that were required to help us through the remaining weeks of basic training. And the male drill sergeant said, Specialist Melcher, solve this. Okay. So we basically, everybody grab whatever product you have, we're going to pool it in the middle of the open bay. So, you know, everybody brought everything that they had out of their lockers. All right, now we're going to redistribute these. Some products are easier to use than others. Some products were new to some of these women. Specialist Melcher, it sounds like they need a class. So the physical challenge of basic training and that hanyak, I was not going to do basic training again. I was determined. So because of that leadership role, I'd gotten to know the drill sergeants pretty well, and one of whom, Staff Sergeant Chambers, I will never forget this guy. He's like, you're in a bad way. Like, it's probably best for you to go to PTRP. And I said, you don't understand. If I don't make it through this, I'm not going to make it to OCS. I'm not going to make it to flight school. I need to continue. You know, can you walk? I can limp. Can you stay in step? Do my best. So this guy, I probably should have given you a fake name because this is super illegal. But every morning, he would show up, and before formation, he would give me some vitamin M. That's a whole bunch of Motrin. And I could make it through the day. And thank God for vitamin M. Thank God for that drill sergeant for bending the rules, because that helped me keep going. So I still haven't told you about getting shot at. The very last week in basic training, we're out in the field. This is our lanes training, and we're actually going to go out onto the range. And because of the operations in Iraq and Afghanistan, it was really important for us to understand how to do convoy operations and how to clear buildings. And so we are learning counterinsurgents tactics. We are learning things that got us out of the standard Vietnam-era training that we'd been getting for the first several weeks. So one of the things that we had to do was a live fire exercise in 5-ton trucks. And imagine, if you will, the range was serpentine. Downrange was still downrange. The tower was still the opposite direction. But there is a serpentine track, and the 5-ton trucks would snake back and forth. As trainees, half of us would be oriented uprange and half would be oriented downrange in the back of that truck. And because there was a time when there were actually privates with weapons oriented at the tower, we did this 3 times. First time, weapons were in a stack, and we had, an arms private who was watching all the weapons, and we had no weapons, and we had to say bang, bang when it was our turn to orient downrange and engage the targets. No kidding. So here we go. All right, I'm downrange. Bang, bang, bang. Look at me go. Next time we do the range, it's with weapons and no rounds. Ammunition is back behind the tower. We all go through. Now it's dry fire. Okay, fine. We orient downrange. Bang, bang. We're getting good at this. Third time we go, it's actually live rounds. And because we only have so many trucks, we have to go platoons at a time. So my platoon is back in the wood line. I'm on a knee. Everybody else is down on their seats. And we're watching this last squad go. And you hear the rounds downrange, and all of a sudden I hear, shh, shh, shh. I'm going, shit. I know that sound. So I'm yelling. The privates next to me start standing up. I thought I was going to lose my mind. Get down! Everybody is like, the drill sergeants are diving back into the wood line trying to tackle us to the ground. Private Jackson, I don't know whether he was malicious or had lost his mind or whatever it was, but for the rest of the time while we were out in the field, he was digging graves for everyone in my platoon with his E-tool, because he could have killed every single one of us. That was basic training. Thanks so much.
Hey. Any questions for Kate? Nope. Any questions for Kate? Oh, the special sound of bullets, yes.
And it took a minute for my brain to register, right? I knew the sound. Where had I heard that sound? I'm not supposed to hear that sound. The rounds are supposed to go the other way. That probably happened in a split second, but even as I remember it, it just seemed like minutes went by until it registered and until we started hitting the deck. It's crazy.
All right. Thank you very much.
Are we still training? 2006. I can speak for the Army. I think maybe the Marines still segregate basic training. They're integrated as well? Okay. Excellent. So that should be all services that are integrated. Sure. You know, it's interesting. We talk a lot about the transition of women being allowed in combat, and Colonel Cook and I were talking about this, and it truly is all about standards. One of the wonderful things about the military is that they've almost always been the tip of the spear for social change and for equality. Our military units were integrated for people of color before our schools were. Men and women were allowed the same jobs in the Army before they were in civilian society. And because the Army is a standards-based organization, if you can do the job, do the job. If you can't, you can't. There are some men that I would not want to go into combat with, and women that I would. So with the exception of a few biological differences, like that special moment that I had in training, in basic training, other than that, it's if you can do the job, do it. Fort Jackson, South Carolina. Yeah, and then I went off to OCS, which was at Fort McClellan in Alabama, the old MP school, and I did Lanes training at South Meade in South Dakota, and then flight school, of course, at Mother Rucker.
All right, well, we're waiting for Tim to get up here so we can hear him and actually record this possibly. So, all right, I'll start it again. We got Tim Miller here, and he is in the Army in 67, 68. Ended up in E5. So, Tim, you're on.
Well, I was like most of you. I was a draft. I hadn't expected to be called. I had a good job, was married, but they were drafting everybody. So they came into our county and just policed us all up. And, Jesus, I thought he was after me. Anyhow, had reception at Fort Bragg, and everybody knows that drill. We paraded around for about 3 days from building to building, and on the final day, they took about 300-400 of us, and we ended up in a parking lot sitting on our duffel bag about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and every once in a while, a deuce and a half would pull up, and they would call off names. A bunch of guys get in, and away they go. And this went on till I would say it had to be about 7, 8 o'clock. There was probably a dozen of us still sitting in the parking lot. And, of course, you know how it is. You guys over there about 20 feet away, and you go, what do you think you're going to do with us? And they'd say, oh, I heard that we get to go home. And so... it's getting dark, and pretty soon Deuce and a Half shows up, loads us up, and we go to the airport, and there's an old beat-up Saturn Airways DC-6, and they load us on this thing, and it off into the dark it goes, belching fire, and no one on board had a clue where we're going. They handed one guy a whole packet of stuff, not all sealed. And about 4 hours later, we bounced to a stop somewhere in the dark, and we offloaded, put us on buses, and the first time we even had a clue where the hell we were is we passed through a gate and it says Fort Riley, Kansas. And the idea, I'll kind of abbreviate here, the idea was that they brought people from reception centers all over the place to fill jobs on the post when the 1st Division deployed. So basically, my basic training amounted to we would get up in the morning and we'd fall out, and sergeant would say, man, it's cold. All right, we'll go back in. So we'd go back in, and on We did have some training off and on, depending on the weather. Probably the best was the rifle range. They brought in a team from somewhere, and we spent a week out there on the rifle range, and it was very, very good training program. But anyhow, the first division deployed. They took everybody and put them in a big long line that snaked all the way through the company area, and by alphabetical order. And I must tell you, there's more M's than there are Smiths. I was so far back in that damn line. I mean, almost to the end of that thing. And you went into a building, and they said, "Here are the jobs we had. What do you want?" And they would read off the available jobs. And you'd say, "Well, I want to be, you know, I want to be a fighter pilot, you know, or something." And but anyhow, when they got to me, there were three jobs left. And firefighter, cook, and clerk typist. Now, my goal when I was drafted was to avoid anything dangerous, okay? I mean, that was my goal. I was married. I got drafted. I had a good job back home that I left, and the idea was not to get hurt. And so I said, I'm clerk typist for me. And they said, "Well, can you type?" I said, "Oh, yeah, like in high school, I can type like the wind." So they sent me to a week of clerk school, and teach you all about the Army paperwork and everything. And they give the typing test. I just sit there, hit that thing, and they say, "Time's up." I said, "Whoa, shoo!" So, anyways, they assigned me to the 192nd Assault Helicopter Company, which was a new company forming to deploy to Vietnam. So I checked in down there, and I was one of the very first enlisted men there. We had no aircraft, and there were just some officers and a few enlisted men. But within weeks, the aircraft started to arrive and the people coming from everywhere. I was the maintenance clerk. And so I would go to the maintenance office, Major Brown was the maintenance officer. And one day I showed up. Now, all the aircraft are there, and they're prepping them. They've just come into the factory, changing filters, all kinds of stuff. And I walked in, and Major Brown says, "Miller, you are the worst clerk in the Army, okay? You can't type, you don't know anything about the paperwork, and you can't even make coffee. So I want you to go out to the hangar. I see you have aviation background. I want you to go out to the hangar and see Sergeant McGinnis. We'll just change your MOS. And I'll talk about that the next time, how I became a crew chief on a UH-1H. Not exactly what I had in mind when I said I didn't want to get hurt. That's it."
Oh, it's Tim Miller. Tim Miller. It's a good thing that we were all shy in here. It's these are great stories. And as we were talking, it looks like we're going to be talking about our next duty assignments after basic training next time. So and get prepared for September's program, everybody that's out there. And how to talk to people and influence, for, you know, have new friends and so forth. We're going to wrap it up tonight. That's our stories for this, and we're sticking to them. And we want to thank everybody for coming out for There I Was. We're going to do it again in September, and I think probably the topic will be continuing into our advanced training for that one. And that should be pretty interesting because there are some of us that aren't sure how we survived that part. And you guys were all very skilled. So thank you all very much. You've been listening to Veterans Radio, production of There I Was, and we will be back next week. Until then, you are dismissed.